and welcome to YA Book Jam, the monthly book club podcast with your hosts Arden Jones,
Shirley Mack,
and JL Blakely.
After our horror-fueled book choice for last month, I wanted to move into the month of love with a romance, and not just any romance, an Ali Hazelwood romance. She's a current queen of the genre right now, and this book had me quivering more than a king in a checkmate position. The book is, of course, Check and Mate, Ali's first YA book, and did she do good or what? So I'm just going to have a read of the blurb. Mallory Greenleaf is done with chess. Every move counts nowadays. After the sport led to the destruction of her family 4 years earlier, Mallory's focus is on her mum, her sisters, and the dead-end job that keeps her lights on. That is, until she begrudgingly agrees to play in one last charity tournament and inadvertently wipes the board with notorious king killer Nolan Sawyer, current world champion and reigning bad boy of chess. Nolan's loss to an unknown rookie shocks everyone. What's even more confusing? His desire to cross pawns again. What kind of gambit is Nolan playing? The smart move would be to walk away, resign, game over. But Mallory's victory opens the door to sorely needed cash prizes, and despite everything, she can't help feeling drawn to the enigmatic strategist. As she rockets up the ranks, Mallory struggles to keep her family safely separated from a game that wrecked it in the first place. And as a love for the sport she so desperately wanted to hate begins to rekindle, Mallory quickly realises that the games aren't only on the board. The spotlight is brighter than she imagined, and the competition can be fiercely attractive and intelligent and infuriating. So, I know that romance isn't everyone's cup of tea. We all know it's going to have a happy ending, right? But for me, that's not what it's about at all. I just want to have all those feels, the highs, the lows, the when, the what if, and how are they going to fix this complete mess that they've got themselves in, all those things. That's what draws me into a good romance book. And also just like that pure escapism as well. So before we move into the characters and the plot and all that jazz, did this book tick your romance boxes? And what did you think about a romance being based around the brilliant game that is chess?
Yeah, so I'll be honest, I've never read any Ali Hazelwood before. This was new territory for this author, me going in. I love the cover. I've looked at the book before and I thought about purchasing it, so I was quite glad when you picked this. I thought it was a good choice for us because we have been doing a lot of thrillers and horrors, and I thought, oh, a nice wee romance, and that's exactly what it was. I was reading it on Audible and it was a pure joy. I think for me, it actually did tick all the romance boxes. I feel like I like a romance every now and again. It's not my favourite genre, but it's a good palate cleanser between books. So for me, that was definitely a great choice, ticked all the boxes. And I am a sucker for anything that involves a sports-type romance.
Ah, okay, because there's like a huge, it's huge right now. Like ice hockey romance is apparently
so
massive.
So huge. I know that book Icebreaker came out. I guess I quite like a sort of slow burn romance, and I think this had elements of that because, you know, it's slow to build and, you know, the way it worked out, you've got the conflict and then what's going to happen at the end, all that kind of thing. So for me, it was the right kind of tropes that was in this book. I loved it centred around chess, and it's funny because I will watch any movie that's got like a sports romance in it, even although I'm not really that into sports. So I love the tension that is always around a sporting event and how that adds to it with the love interest as well. So yes, I was definitely impressed and had all the feels going in.
So I'll raise my hand and say I am one of those people that's not really into romance. It's not my cup of tea. I know you know that. But I do, I've said before, I do love a side romance story in a book. And I love romanticism.
Plus, it's February. This is going out in February.
Absolutely.
So I feel like I think I chose the February one last year, and it wasn't a romance after all. It was, but it wasn't. So I'm so glad that.
Yeah, and I mean, I chose ASAP at the start of the year, but I chose it like to kind of push myself because I'm not really into that genre. But so it's not like I'm anti-romance. I do like it in books. Every Christmas, I love a cheesy Hallmark Christmas movie, but only for those 4 weeks of the year. Like, I don't watch rom-coms, just not really into it. But like those 4 weeks, it's like I change into this different person, and I want, like, give me all the cheesiness, all the lovey-dovey. Like, you know exactly.
She's Cameron
what's
Diaz in the holiday in over the Christmas.
Yeah, that's me. Absolutely, just for 4 weeks.
I love the holiday.
Yeah, even if it's not my favorite genre. And we've said this before on the podcast that this pushes us to read books kind of out of our comfort zone because we all like different styles of books. Any book that makes me feel anything, I'm going to enjoy. Any book that has layered, interesting characters, I'm going to enjoy. And this is definitely a beloved romance book. We've had messages on Instagram from listeners who were so excited we chose it. Even romance author Anika Hussain commented saying this is one of her favorite romance books and she couldn't put it down when she was reading it. So that's very high praise.
Oh, wow.
And I also read somewhere, I think it was an interview on Instagram that of Ali Hazelwood's, where she said that this book was the book of her heart. You know, every author has that book that just like has your heart that you've written. And it's really hard to explain because you love all your books you've written, but there's just one that, yeah, that's like your baby. So once I heard that, I was really excited to read this. I'm like, she's the queen of the genre. And if this is the book of her heart, like, it's a good one to start with. So I'm always game to try a new book. Speaking of games, I really did love that this story was set in the world of competitive chess. I don't know a lot about that world. I can play chess, but I'm not very good at thinking lots of moves ahead. I certainly don't follow it or know anything about competitive chess or who the big players are. The good thing about this book is I felt if, even if you just knew basic chess, like just knew the basic moves of the pieces, you could follow the story. Like, it wasn't so complicated. I felt like she balanced that really well. So yes, I was intrigued and excited to get started.
Oh, lovely. Well, I'm glad that you was both intrigued and excited, and I'm glad that you by the sounds of it enjoyed it. So I'm looking forward to finding out how you both felt about everything as we move on. And actually, yeah, I just wanted to mention the whole chess thing because I feel the same. I used to play chess. I was in chess club when I was in junior school, but that was just where it ended. I can still remember how to play chess, but I can't, like you, I can't think forward about the, I could probably think forward like one or two moves. But then I would also recommend, if you did enjoy this book, to definitely watch The Queen's Gambit, because that is so good.
Oh, that's so good. I so love good. That.
Yeah. Amazing. And that was like kind of so my good. First like insight into competitive chess. So after having watched that, which was quite a while ago, and then reading this, I'm like, I need another book about chess. I need to have season two of The Queen's Gambit, because it just hooked me and it was really fun and interesting. Anyway, let's talk about the characters and let's chat about our protagonist, Mallory. She is the chosen one. She is super cool. She's clever. She is the no strings attached young woman who always puts her family first. And I'm just going to mention here, and I wasn't really sure how I felt about this or how you both felt about this, because it's a YA book. Some of the themes with Mallory's actions, I was like, oh, I'm not sure, because there's going to be 14-year-olds that are reading this, even though it is aimed at the higher YA end. Mallory's having like hookups. She's on like Tinder and she's just meeting like random people for sex. And I was like, I'm not sure how I feel about this, because I'm not judging at all, but I'm thinking of the younger teenagers that are reading it and I'm like, oh, I'm not quite sure about this. I found it a little bit odd. And I also found it a bit odd that her sisters knew so much about her sex life as well. Don't get me wrong, teenagers know a lot about stuff and they probably know more than we even think. But I definitely didn't know about my sister's sex life. I wouldn't have had a clue what was going on. I might have like guessed it, but I felt like they was really, really into it. And I was just a bit like, I'm not sure this is actually needed. It just made me feel a bit icky. But anyway, I'll find out how you both feel a bit about that in a sec. But I just wanted to chat more about Mallory. And look, we learn that really early on something terrible happened to her dad, and this is what split the whole family apart and the reason that she doesn't play chess anymore. And I was like desperate to know what happened. Something that Mallory did caused a rift between her parents and then ultimately led to her father's death. And it takes so long before we find out. And I was like desperate just to know what happened. So from 14 years old, Mallory is now the role of caregiver for her mum and becomes like guardian for her younger sisters. She is paying for the roller derby fees and she's like making sure dinner's on the table. She's paying, making sure the rent's paid. She had so much responsibility on her shoulders, and her strength and determination for me made her such a likable character, and I was like immediately drawn into her story. But one thing that I did love, this opening chapter, there was so much in it, but that end line, the revelation that she does go on to play chess again and that she ends up beating, which is going to be the love interest of the book, the gorgeous and brilliant Nolan Sawyer, who has never ever lost a game in his whole life. And I just want to say that I know this book ticks every single and probably overdone romance trope, but I was just like, yeah, I'm here for this. I want to read it. And I just wanted to know how the journey would unfold. Of course, I knew it'd be a happy ending. I just wanted to know how. So there was a lot to unpack in that first question there. So what were your thoughts about Mallory, and were you ready for the potential and obvious love story between Mallory and Sawyer?
Okay, so I'm going to back up a little bit here. If you've listened to earlier episodes of YA Book Jam, you will know that I am not a fan of prologues. And when I opened this and saw a prologue, my heart sank. I was like, what, romance and a prologue? What is Arden doing to me? But as I was reading it, I also had this internal monologue of like, blah, blah, blah. I know what this is. Like, why is this not a first chapter? It doesn't make any sense. This doesn't need to be a prologue. Meh, 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 meh. That's what was going on in my head and my voice. But then when I got
that's
to the
how
end,
just talks off the podcast, guys.
Meh, 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 meh. But then when I got to the end of that prologue, I had this huge smile on my face, and I think I actually said aloud to myself, touche, Ali Hazelwood, because what a prologue, like standing ovation. Come on, I'm going to read the last few lines. So this is, she's seen an interview with Nolan Sawyer on TV or on her phone. She's been watching an interview and everyone's talking about how he's like the next hot thing in chess and all this. And it says, and I don't think of him again for a little over 2 years. That is until the day we play for the first time. And I wipe the floor with him. And I was just like, yes. And I was like, of course, it's 2 years before everything. It has to be a prologue. It can't be a first chapter. So I don't actually know what I'm talking about. And I was sitting there eating my humble pie because it was an amazing prologue and it should have been a prologue and it was all done perfectly. So moving on, because I don't like to admit when I'm wrong.
And when you do admit that you're wrong, you tell us exactly the ins and outs of it all. So yeah, that was great. I love learning all that.
But yeah, moving on to what you said, Arden, I do think this could have been new adult instead of young adult. They're kind of on that line, being like her being 18. I don't think they actually tell us how old Nolan is. I assumed he's a couple years.
He's 20. Yeah,
he's 20.
We learned that he's
20. It could have been new adult, really. So I do agree with you. I found her 12-year-old sister talking to an adult man, Nolan, openly about sex around the dinner table the first time she meets him really creepy, I'll be honest, and unsettling. And you're right, it wasn't needed for the story. Nolan could have found out about Mallory's past a different way. Also, was it important that he knew about it? I can see she wanted to twist the gender norms by having this really confident sex symbol guy who's actually a virgin, and then this 18-year-old who's very sexually experienced and unapologetic about it. Because if that was the other way around, if we had a female MC who was really inexperienced and then a male MC who was like this experienced rake, no one would bat an eyelid. Like, that's what we see all the time in YA. It's always like the rakish.
It's like all the books of the 80s and 90s.
Exactly. Like, the guy's been sleeping around with everyone, but we don't care because he's the bad boy. Because he's the guy, we don't care. So my issue isn't that how she's assigned these backstories. Like, I kind of liked the twist on it. My issue was that a 12-year-old was talking to a grown man who was essentially a stranger about sex. I didn't like that. I can't say I fully connected to Mallory, though, and I don't really know why. I thought she was a good character. I thought she was a complex, kind of layered character. And I was like you. I was desperate to know what happened with her dad, although I did feel like it was obvious from the start that it wasn't going to be anything that we would judge her for. But I kind of wish it had been. I think that it would have been really interesting and it would have added to her character, because we do make mistakes and we are selfish when we're younger, if she'd actually done something really bad and then had that redemption story. Like, I kind of wish it was, I mean, it was a bad thing, but I wish it was her fault more, because she was blaming herself for it. And I kind of knew from the start, I was like, this isn't going to be her fault. I was like, we're going to find out what this is. We're going to be like, you don't need to blame yourself for that. Nolan, man, Arden, this is the question. There's so many things I have to answer here. I feel like I'm talking too much already. So all I'll say at this point about Nolan is that I was really looking forward to the meeting again.
I think it's kind of mixed in terms of how you two feel, how I feel. I wasn't overly fond of Mallory throughout the entire story, to be perfectly honest with you. You know me, I'm about my B team, and the B team in this was class. So we'll probably talk about that a wee bit later on. So that's, I won't mention anything more about the B team. I love the book, don't get me wrong. I think that going back to what you've said, there was elements in this book that I definitely feel drew away from the plot and did not need to be there. I feel that this was the definition of crossover YA. It certainly should be marketed at a slightly older teenage audience. But when she had her moments with her family, you know, the sort of lovely moments that I always like to treasure in a book, at those bits, they were the bits that I was kind of looking for and the bits I was looking forward to, and the bits that slightly endeared me to her more. But as I say, for me, I was more about the other characters. I felt like I wanted more from Mallory. Like, I felt like I never really truly got to know her throughout the entire story. And yes, she did have layers, but I don't feel like I really, as the reader, got underneath those layers. Mm-hmm. So for me, I would have liked to have seen more from her as a character. I loved Nolan Sawyer. I think he was a very good love interest and definitely had the swoon factor. And he was so patient. He was just willing to let her get to where she needed to get when she needed to get there. And for me, he was a perfect character. And I actually loved this storyline of how he was a virgin. And I love characters that speak out for virginity, because it's such, and just as well as being sexually experienced, I think virginity is just as important as well. And, you know, picking that right person to give that part of yourself to is such an important life lesson for kids growing up as well. So I actually think there was a real massive positivity surrounding that, and I love it. So I was championing him from the beginning, and I was really excited. I just wanted to see more of him, and I was really excited whenever I knew he was going to be coming into the story. And I felt like he definitely could have had more page time, to be honest.
Yeah, there's so much that I agree with you there. I think there's parts of me, I mean, without even thinking about what the sisters were saying and Mallory's actions, I think what Ali was trying to do was just make us see how much she is like closed off to everybody, how her emotions are so shut down because of everything that's happened, to show us that she just doesn't want to get hurt. But there was other ways of doing that rather than making her just have like random hookups. I just think at 18, that's really young already to be doing that, because it's a difficult thing to do, I think. And when you, as you get older, you kind of realize sometimes why you was maybe having these relationships, and maybe they wasn't exactly how you wanted it to be. So yeah, I just felt that kind of crossed the line a bit for me. But I mean, we've just spoke about the family dynamics, and you touched on it, Shelley. There were some really lovely moments, and there were, but like for me, I found the sisters awful throughout the whole thing. Like, Darcy wasn't too bad, but like Sabrina, I thought, like, she's 14, and I get she's a stroppy 14-year-old. I've been that girl. But what I wouldn't have done is really be that nasty to my sister, who's also been 14 and then took care of the family. I'm not going to lie, Sabrina was a total brat. And the whole setup kind of really grated on me throughout the whole book. Mallory had been like the main caregiver and breadwinner for a family for 4 years. And everyone, including her mum, and I'm not like taking it away from her mum how unwell she was, but she leaned so much on her for support and for the bills. It's not a judgment of the whole situation, because these things can happen and no one can really help it. But what really got on my nerves was how they all reacted when Mallory finally did lose her cool. She did go far. She called her sisters and her mum a bitch. But she had the tendency to say things in the heat of the moment. And I think, again, it's because she's pushed so much of her emotions down that when it all comes up, everything just kind of just comes out. And she did it with Nolan as well a bit later on in the story. This all led to like a big turnaround once everything just got like out in the open, because it turned out the sisters and the mum can cope without Mallory anyway, and basically have told her that she shouldn't have been acting like a parent after all. And I just found this bit really frustrating. And I think, like, it's that miscommunication trope. If her mum had just told her that she could cope when Mallory's off doing what she needed to do, and if Mallory had have asked, none of this would have even been a thing. Were you team Mallory or team bratty sisters at this point?
Can you imagine if one of us is like team bratty sisters?
Team bratty sisters. Well, no, like, honestly, you could be, because there's the other part of me that is just like, Mallory did take it too far, and maybe Mallory just needed to give them that space to let her know how they were feeling, but they didn't. They was just like, me, I need this, pay for this, dinner. And when it comes down to it, they're just like, well, you didn't need to do all that. Like, okay.
Oh. Yeah.
It's not something off the side.
But tell us how you really feel. Arden's chucking tables over there.
Whacking things out the way, they're bratty sisters.
You know, I was trying not to judge this part of the book too harshly. I didn't think Darcy was really so bad at all. I felt as if the whole bickering element of her with her sister Sabrina, that's so indicative towards two children that are close in age. because I've got two girls that are close in age and they bicker, 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 bicker. So I kind of laughed a few times at the beginning, thinking, oh my goodness, that'll be my girls when they're, not the rest of it, just the bickering part of it, when they're kind of 12 and 14. But I really hated, my least favourite part was this conversation where they were all saying that to each other. I really wish that it didn't need to be in there, because I thought the book was so strong. And I think just the way that they were, once they sort of got over the element of calling each other that, and I'm just not saying the word because I don't like the word, but once they were all calling each other that, I was like, they just kind of were blasé about the reaction afterwards. They just kind of forgot about it and moved on. It's just the way that they dealt with the whole conversation and reacted. I didn't like any of it, to be honest. But if you have an issue that you do not squash quickly, that just builds and it builds and it builds until the point where you just explode. And I think that part was relatable, because we've all done that in our lives. And this was a classic case of a festering moment that just implodes. So I think that the build up to that in respect was quite good. But yeah, I don't know. I felt sorry for Mallory, and I felt she definitely needed to have it out with her sisters and her mother. I just wished it had been done in a different way. That's kind of my take on it.
I agree with a lot of what you both have said. I feel like this moment had to be in the book, just because, like what you said, we were just building up to it. And it was such a messy situation of her lying to her family, of her trying to provide everything. It wasn't sustainable. There was going to have to come a point where this all just imploded, which is what happened. I'm definitely not team Bri sisters. It's horrible. I think what bothered me more was the mum in the situation, because yes, you can argue miscommunication, but it's not like her mum was like not there. It's not like she was away at work. Like, she was in the house because she had this chronic illness, and they weren't quiet. Like, she must have known what was going on. She must have known these kids had all these activities and known that all those activities had to be paid for. I don't understand how the mum was so missing despite being there in the situation the whole time. And what annoyed me was, at one point she excused the girl's behavior by saying, oh, you know, like, their brain hasn't fully developed yet because they're still teenagers. And it's like, yeah, of course, that's why teenagers are moody and hormonal, but it doesn't excuse the behavior. I just felt like the mom had kind of brushed over it. I was kind of proud of Mallory when she finally broke. I was like, finally, she's standing up for herself. Finally, she's saying what I'm feeling about these two ungrateful little goblins in our house. But it's interesting what you say, Shelley, because I didn't find the word as offensive. So the reaction to her calling her sisters that seemed a bit over the top to me.
It's the disrespect, the sheer disrespect in that moment for your family. And you, once you say something, you can't unsay it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think
she was in a really emotional place and she apologised and realised. So I think, for me, I didn't mind that she called them that word. I was a bit taken aback when she called her mummy. I was a bit like, that maybe have gone a bit too far. Yeah. But the sisters, I was like, well, definitely Sabrina anyway. Like, I just thought, you know what, this needs to come out. I just didn't like how it was dealt with after. Not straight after, I think, fair enough. Her mum had really tried to give Mallory that space to be open and tell everyone what was going on. But it was just the way it was all after was like, well, you know, you didn't need to do this. If I was Mallory, I'd be like, well, you could have told me this over the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Rather than letting me get to this point where I'm trying to be parent, I've had to give up everything that I love doing. No one's explained to me that it wasn't my fault because of what had happened to Dad. And here I am just imploding and calling someone that were like those words. But I think it just showed how much she'd taken on her shoulders and how much she couldn't cope when she did say that. I didn't see it as a lack of respect at all. I found the family disrespectful of Mallory after that. I think Mallory was just like, I feel so bad that I've said that and I'm really, really sorry.
I felt like the mum had swept under what the sisters had done. The mum had very much like talked out, been like, oh, well, that's just because of their age or whatever. But then she was so shocked at Mallory calling them that. Like, there was no grace with Mallory, but there was so much grace with the sisters for the mum's point of view. And that's what I struggled with. I felt very unfair.
I suppose maybe it's better to be out there and address these things. It's just not the word I would choose to use. So I don't want to judge it, But certainly, I mean, look at how much we talked about this one conversation. So it's got everybody talking. It's like she's obviously written a book that's going to, like, we'll remember this. I will definitely remember this part of the book. And I think that that's quite clever as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's raised a lot of emotions
Yeah,
for all of us, hasn't it?
definitely.
So now we're going to talk about the B cast, and you mentioned it earlier, Shelley, because I know how much you love them. So we had Mallory's best friend Easton, who had been a constant presence in her life. And before leaving for college, she convinces Mallory to play one more game of chess for a charity event, which is the game that changes her life and introduces her to Nolan Sawyer. But once Easton leaves for college, their friendship kind of dwindles and it leaves Mallory feeling a bit hurt and quite betrayed. And then there's Daphne, who runs the Zugzwang Chess Club and also is a renowned chess grandmaster who recognises Mallory's potential. Daphne offers her a prestigious fellowship opportunity, which would not only allow Mallory to pursue her hidden away passion for chess, but also provide financial support for her struggling family. And then we also meet Oz, who I personally really loved Oz. He initially comes across as like this moody and mysterious person. However, as the story progresses, Oz unexpectedly becomes a friend to Mallory. He isn't afraid to speak his mind and share some home truths with her, even if they are difficult to hear. So, although all these characters were there for Mallory throughout the book, for me it still seemed as though she felt so alone throughout a lot of it. And since her dad's death, she's had to take on so much, as we've discovered, and she's basically shut herself off from any emotion. The risk for her of like getting hurt outweighs anything. And really, her only friend was Easton. And now without her, she feels totally alone. I just felt this was quite an interesting friendship setup. For a kind of B cast, they wasn't all there in one place all the time. There wasn't like a group of friends, it was just sporadic friends all over the place. It'd be interesting to hear what you thought about this kind of dynamic, and did you have a favorite?
Yes, and yes. I'm going to be honest here. I liked the B characters more than I liked Mallory or Nolan. They were my absolute favorites. I was just thinking, actually, as you read that question about Mallory feeling alone, I totally agree with what you said. Like, she does seem to be alone, but she's constantly surrounded by people. And I'm wondering maybe. Because I didn't really connect to Mallory. I felt quite detached from her, but clearly Ali's done that on purpose because Mallory was such an emotionally detached person that I think I never emotionally connected to her, which would make a lot of sense. But back to the B characters, can you guess who my favorite was? Oz, he was my absolute favorite
I loved
character. He is
Oz.
my spirit animal. He made me so happy. Everything he said was what I was thinking. I was cackling when I was reading his lines. Absolutely loved Oz. I also really loved Nolan's friends, Emil and Tanu, or Tanu.
Yes,
I
yeah.
loved their banter with each other and with Nolan and how they became friends and cheerleaders of Mallory's as well. And they didn't have as much page time, Oz either, actually, but I felt like all those characters really shone in the small moments that they were on the page. So I don't think they needed more page time. I just think they were so exceptionally written that they were such big personalities in such small bursts, but we still got all of that. And not only did they all have clear and complete character arcs, but what all good B characters should do and what they did was teach us more about the main characters. And I feel like we learned more about Mallory and Nolan through these characters and their interactions with them. So that's like, mwah, B cast. I mean, that's what you want them to do. That's their job on the page. And yeah, they were just all so well written, in my opinion.
Yeah, the B cast was what cemented this book for me completely. I adored Oz from the first snarky comment that ever left his mouth. I adored him. He's the kind of character that you can imagine being friends with and you would just love to torment him, you know, but then he really loves you secretly in the background. I thought that was perfection because I think there really are people and friendships like that. And I agree with you, Jess. I loved Tenyu and Emil. I actually thought that they were the perfect found family for Mallory because they weren't like the family at home that was expected too much of her or were giving her grief for certain things, but they were this family that appeared who had a similar interest, that saw chess in the way that she saw chess, and it really brought her into her own, which is exactly what a found family should do. They were just absolutely brilliant. And I also loved what they brought out in Nolan as well because Nolan, on the face of it, was like a standoffish kind of, you know, like nobody really knows him, this mysterious guy who's maybe not a nice person, all the rest of it. And you realise he is a lovely person when you see it through the eyes of his friends. So as soon as all these people come on board, it's like, yes, love it. I would have liked to know Mallory better. Like, I felt as if, as a character, she could have been developed a bit more. But I love the moments in where I saw her through other people's eyes.
Oh, I love those answers. They were fab. And it's just so good. And you're so right that that's what the B-cast is there for. And I love that you just spoke about the fan family.
That's my favourite talk.
Yeah, I loved that setup. I thought it was so much fun. And I loved those moments when they was all playing chess together. And I was just like, oh, I just want to be in that room. But the room I don't want to be in is a room when Cock is in it, because that is what I call him.
That's how it's pronounced. That is how it's pronounced on the Audible, by the way.
It is. Okay, good. Because I'm so glad that I can just call him Cock. Because he absolutely is. He was awful. It was just so awful. But like, he was also just like the most believable antagonist ever. So yeah, like Mallory nearly, actually she wins, but she doesn't quite win at one of the major tournaments, and she beats Cock but loses the match because he calls her out on a technicality, doodling on a score sheet, which is a legitimate chess rule, by the way. I looked it up. But still, her ranking as a second place player wins Mallory enough money to pay off her family's overdue bills, and also enough that Mallory can afford different medication for her mum's illness, which I thought was just such a lovely touch to the story. And as I mentioned earlier, was not given enough credit for in my eyes. But back to Cock, I thought his character really highlighted the sexist and misogynistic inequality in the chess community. But I was so glad to see his downfall. There was a quote from Nolan about Cock which says, "I'd rather drink a can of Axe body spray while feral raccoons feast on my exposed bone marrow than sit across from this twat." And I was like, yes, 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 I loved that. I just thought that was such a good line. Like, Ali nailed that. But yeah, what did you think of our awful antagonist? And did he have enough of a punishment?
I do think it was enough. Obviously, Cock was in there to hate. From the minute that he has any airtime, you're like, oh my goodness, this guy is a horror. Just how he was looking for things to pick up on, the way that she did her drawing, and she didn't even know, and he obviously knew to use that against her. So he was clever enough to do that. But I knew straight away when he won the championship with that extremely clever move that even she didn't foresee, I knew right then and there he's cheating. Somebody's feeding this to him somehow, or giving him a code word or a signal. It was obvious to me that he did not do that on his own, because at the end of the day, he just wasn't good enough to beat them. So I couldn't wait for it to come to the point where he would be exposed for his crime. And of course he was, and it ended up well in the end, but it would have been maybe a little bit more pleasant to have seen his downfall in a more shocking way. I don't know. I was glad that he got caught for his cheating and a punishment for that.
Yeah, I completely agree. He was the perfect antagonist to hate. Ali picked the perfect name for him. She knew exactly what she was doing. And I love that she didn't really, there was no really joke about his name. There was no pun on his name in it, because that would have been too easy. Like, it was just there hanging on the page for us as readers to understand what was happening there. It was so obvious he cheated. So this is the second time around, because the first time he technically lost, but then won because she'd been doodling. But the second time when he beat her, it was so obviously cheated. It was too obvious, in fact. And I don't understand why Nolan and Mallory didn't realise. I wish he had beat her fair and square. I'm going to say something controversial. I think Mallory's journey with chess was far too easy in this book.
Yeah,
she didn't lose one game. She drew a few, but she continually moved on in competition. And the only game she actually lost was to a world number, what was he, like number 4 at this point? So I know you're saying like, oh, he's just nowhere near as good as them, but like, I found it unbelievable that he wasn't as good, at least not for Nolan, but like for Mallory. So he had to be an amazing chess player to get to number 4, even if he was a horrible person. And the only reason she lost is because he cheated. Like, I just didn't find that believable at all. It felt unbelievable to me that she could stumble back into chess after years of not training and just instantly be winning everything. And I think Cock would have been a better antagonist if it felt like they were equally matched. I mean, even Rocky gets beat in beat bad. And that's why when he picks himself up and comes back, you're out of your seat, you're jumping up and down, you're cheering for him with tears streaming down your face. And I never got that feeling with Mally. Like, that's in all kind of sporting films where you see the main character just get beat so badly, they're having to find that self-confidence again and come back. And I didn't get that at all with her. So as much as I loved the antagonist of this book and he was the perfect man to hate, I just wish it had been harder for Mallory.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. A lot of it was too easy for her. Not her home life, that was not, but the whole chesting was too easy. It was all very, it was just, she was found by Daphne, like she'd seen her on TikTok and now she's in this world championship, and like you have to work so hard to get into that. I agree. I would have liked to have seen something that she'd have had to overcome a bit more. I think, you know, we want to see that arc, don't we? And I feel like she didn't really have much of a character arc. When I think about it, kind of the only thing that she learned is that she can still play chess, even though she's had 4 years off, and she's still brilliant at it. Also, maybe she does need to listen to others, which was kind of the only thing that I took from it, that she learned from the whole of the story. She needs to give some time to others to express how they feel, rather than it all being about her. And I was just like, I still didn't feel like that was believable enough. Yeah, I'm in agreement. I concur.
Phew.
I never even really thought about that at all. I just enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, it's just, when someone else starts talking about it, you're like, yeah, no, why didn't... That's true. That's actually true. That's how I felt. Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
I really wanted him to beat her and for us to be like, to feel that moment of like, oh no, she was beat by him and he's so horrible and like, ugh. And then for her to come back and completely like clean the floor with him and him to be completely humiliated in the process of her doing that. I feel like it would have felt like more of a win.
Definitely. Okay, let's move away from all this serious chat and let's get into what we're here for, which is the romance. And I've left it till right at the end to talk about the romance. We've talked friends, we've talked all the plot stuff and everything that's going on with Mallory and the characterization and everything, but I've left out romance, so I'm here for this now. Let's get into it. So I loved their relationship, I'm not gonna lie. I enjoyed that it wasn't really too much of a will they won't they. I did appreciate that Mallory had shut herself off so much that she was just totally oblivious to Nolan's obvious feelings for her. But then there was that little bit of me, although I loved it, I'm just like, someone just talk to each other, for goodness sake. Just tell someone how you feel. Like, he was making it so obvious. Even she ran away from him when she first beat him, and then she ran into him at the pool, and he wasn't awful to her. She just saw him as this big, dark, brooding person just standing over her, and she just ran away again, like, because she thought he was going to hurt her. Like, she was, like, thinking he's just so dangerous because of his reputation. And he just didn't come across like that at all. So I would have kind of, there's a bit of me that's like, he had this reputation, he needed to live up to it a bit for me to believe that she really felt this way about him. There's a quote in the book, something that Nolan says, and I'm just like, why did she still not see it? So he says, chess is a bad idea. Why? Look where it got me. And then Nolan says, it got you here to me. And I'm like, what is that? Why are you still not falling into his arms? Like, what on earth is going on? Oh, but anyway, finally, they admitted their feelings for each other, and I was just like, yes! So Nolan asked Mallory to be his second, and a second is a professional player who helps a higher-rated player prepare for tournaments. This means that they work together, learn from each other, and now Mallory will know all of Nolan's tricks and ways, ultimately giving her the upper hand when and if they ever play chess against each other. So during the training, they become so entwined with each other, and I really loved it, like how cute they was together. I mentioned it earlier, the way all the friends played chess, and there was a part where Nolan sat behind her. He nibbled on her ear. Just like, aww. But yeah, but it was still like, oh, that's so sweet. She's still a bit like, not sure what's going on here. But yeah.
You think he likes me?
No, he just loves ears. But like, he was just, he's hungry. I just thought he was so lovable. Like, I don't think he had a flaw, which for me isn't the best either. I felt like he needed a flaw. So I'd be interested if you find one. So I did kind of feel like it was a little bit unrealistic, but he'd also never had a relationship. So he'd never been hurt, not outside of his family anyway. So he went into this 100% all in. So he hasn't got anything to compare or not had these bad experiences in order to possibly have these relationship flaws. I don't know. But to me, he's like the perfect book boyfriend. So I would like to know how you feel about their very, very, very slow burn romance. In my eyes, that's how I feel. And how did Mallory not see it, even though it was so obvious? Any ideas, girls?
I'm so sorry. I thought Nolan was a really flat character. Like, he didn't do it for me at all. Like, you say he didn't have any flaws. Aww. I feel like his flaw was that he didn't have a personality. And I know that's awful, but I didn't get it. Like, when I talked about how the B-cast shone on the page, I never felt that way with Nolan. Some of his lines were sweet. That line you read out was beautiful. Like, I will admit that. You're right. I don't understand how Mallory didn't get that he liked her. Especially someone as experienced as her. Like, I was like, come on now. Like, what, are you kidding me? Anyway, I think it would have been more realistic if, with all the experience that she had, maybe she thought he was trying to trick her or saying what she wanted to hear because he wanted something from her, maybe, like, just for her to be a bit more jaded. But that didn't seem to occur to her. She just trusted him so completely. And, like, there was times when he said those really sweet lines like that. I think there was a few lines where she said something like, and I knew he meant it. And I'm like, how did you know? She maybe didn't believe that he liked her, but she trusted him. And that felt unrealistic to me. I'm sorry. even though I didn't personally connect with Mallory, I did think that she was an interesting character. I thought she had lots of different layers. As you said, maybe some of those layers we saw more through other people's eyes. But she was an interesting character. I didn't feel the same way about Nolan. I felt he had a lot of potential to be interesting. I was rooting for them to be together. But what I wanted even more was to see them finally play chess against each other.
Yes.
And see what happened. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk about that a little bit later in the end. I'm not going to say any more about that right now. He had been so hurt by his family. He hadn't really experienced love. And to me, that should have made him a little bit more guarded. But he fell hard and fast. I just struggled to put my finger on it. I don't know what it is. He was all very beige to me, like boiled potatoes. But I wanted Dauphinois potatoes. But I love potatoes so much that at least take it as a compliment that I'm comparing them to some type of potatoes.
Oh, I love potatoes.
But they were boiled potatoes. I do love a slow burn romance. I love the subtle, beautiful moments that you get with them. It was slow burn in the sense that it took them a long time to get together. And it felt slow burn as far as the feelings for Mallory, but not with Nolan. He was just like, she beats him once at the very beginning of the book and he's like, I'm obsessed with this girl. There was nothing subtle about the way he felt either. There was no kind of like, oh, I can see the first buds of something turning from friendship to romance. It was just like, no, straight in, he liked her. I don't want to be overly negative. So he was meant to be the bad boy of chess. He was meant to have this big wild reputation. And then we found out that's not true. So that's kind of interesting. Here are the things I did like. I did like his tragic backstory. I liked that he believed in her. And what I really loved about their relationship, and what made Mallory a little more accessible to me than Nolan, was the moment she confesses to herself that she didn't want to play him because he would win and then he might not think she was exceptional anymore. And that felt very real and very raw. And it made so much sense to me. And that was one of those moments in the book where I was just like, I felt it in the feels when she said that. Cause I was like, oh, I get it. Like I would be terrified of the same thing. Like, you've beat him once, he's now become obsessed with you. If you play him and he beats you, he's just going to be like, oh, well, it was just a fluke the first time. And I'm so sorry to everyone that loves this book. Someone else say something.
Well, I'll say something now and I don't agree.
So. What a relief.
Like we've already said, how fun would it be if we were all just like, yes, I agree with everything that each of us say, you know, like that is not a podcast. So, you know, thank you, Jess, for bringing a different viewpoint here. And I definitely do see a lot of what you're saying as well. Although I don't agree with it, I can totally see your point as well. I think the reason, first of all, I'll answer the imminent question, which is, you know, Mallory, how did she not see how he was feeling for her? But I think it was pretty obvious in the sense that Mallory had some baggage, some issues, things she was dealing with from her past. And I just don't think she saw it because she didn't feel like she deserved to be loved. I think in terms of Nolan, yes, he was given that sort of bad boy, standoffish, who is this mysterious guy kind of persona at the start of the book. And I actually was quite glad to know that he just was a really nice guy who basically knew what he wanted. I think he saw Mallory, he gave her the time that she needed. He's a chess player. He's analysed her. He's researched her. He's given her that time to come to her inevitable ending. I thought it was quite a beautiful love story, because if there's anything that I do love after A Fine Family, it is a slow burn romance. I liked the romance.
Yeah, I love that we're all so different in how we read books, but also like in what we're seeing in people. So it's just interesting how characters are written and we see them so differently. 3/4 of the way in, there's this thing that happens, and obviously it has to happen. It's a romance, so we have to have this hurdle. They've just got together. They can't live happily ever after from like 2/3 in. Something has to happen. It's a romance story. And now she finds out that Nolan paid for her to be funded with Zugzwang. Mallory is strong and proud, and she just doesn't take this well at all. She knew there was funding after her initial win with Nolan, but she didn't know that a big chunk of it was from him. He'd played her, he'd lost, and then he was obsessed with her, and he wants her to play chess, so he basically pays for her to play chess. I mean, he's a bit stalkerish as well, if you ask me, so maybe he has got a flaw. Yeah, I take it all back. But anyway, so now she feels cheated, and because of this, she turns her back on chess completely, goes back home, does some mechanic training because she was a mechanic before she went off to do her chess fellowship. But then Oz, our favourite B-Cast characters, turns up, pretty much tears her a new bottom. I just totally loved him at this point. I was so frustrated with Mallory here. I get why she was upset, but like, I was like, you so overreacted. You were so awful to him. And although I understood why she was acting this way, it did come across really childish, I thought. When Oz was like, this is how it is. You need to go and play chess. Daphne has spent so much time training. Oz really needed to tell her what was going on and know how much she'd let Daphne down. And this is where, and we did mention it earlier, that we learn the whole family knew all along. We have Mallory with her sisters, and then her best friend just comes back onto the scene, and they're all going to the Chess World Championships together to play against Nolan, who they've now split up. And I don't know about you, I would have liked to have more of a reason. I felt like this breakup was just not big enough for such a huge reaction. And I also felt in a very similar way about the friendship with Mallory and Easton. I just felt like the makeup seemed too easy. I totally understood Mallory, like Easton just totally blanked her. And you mentioned earlier, like things were just too easy. And I think this, again, was just too easy for her. So what were your thoughts about the breakup, and did you have any idea the family knew what Mallory was doing all along?
I think that it's quite typical of like somebody does something to somebody else to protect their feelings and they don't want them to know, then they find out and they can't quite accept it. For me, I thought more about the relationship that she had with Easton. With social media at your fingertips, it's difficult to believe that two best friends would fall apart. And I didn't see a reason for them to not continue being friends just because of that distance. Yes, it might slow down a wee bit, or you might have to check in less, but you would still do that. There should have been maybe a reason why they weren't so close, and that might have been a better point of tension in the book for me.
I actually didn't mind the friendship story with Easton. I totally forgot her name there for a second. Clearly she wasn't in the book very much. I actually found it quite realistic that when you go off to university or college or whatever, it'd be very easy to get out of touch with the people back home. I just didn't really second guess it in the book, I don't think. What I actually found very believable about the social media aspect was that she was seeing her update her Instagram or whatever, and she was commenting like, oh, well, Easton looks happy in that picture. Like, of course, you're not going to put pictures of yourself up pining after your best friend that you missed. It's only the good stuff you put on social media. And I found that very believable that if she was just scrolling through Easton's feed, you would be thinking, oh, look at her having the best time in her life. I bet she's not even thinking of me, when she probably was. So I didn't mind that plot point. I didn't find it too unrealistic. The breakup, oh, it's like such a classic romance breakup. Like, oh, he's rich and he believed in me enough to help my career. How could he? I hate you. Like, if any rich guys out there want to believe in my work and give me a book deal, I mean, I'm married, but you go right ahead. I will not stop you. I will not be mad at you. I will take that money happily. I mean, all joking aside, I do get it. Like, as far as Mallory's character, she is the provider. And like you said, she's strong and independent, but it's not unrealistic for people invested in a sport to see potential and financially back it. But I guess where it gets a bit muddy with this is that then they ended up in a relationship. And I actually can see why she would have been mortified if people found out he funded her place and then she was his girlfriend. Like, she'd want to feel like she got there on her own merit. But yeah, another reason why I struggle with the romance genre is that I hate the miscommunication trope, and it's standard for this genre, so I always get frustrated by that. I don't know how I feel about the break. Like, what else would they have broken up over? Like, that's what I couldn't, I was trying to answer this question. I was like, if I'm going to sit here and say this shouldn't be why they've broken up, why should they have? And I couldn't really come up with something. I mean, maybe it would have been nice if Nolan did something wrong to show he actually had a flaw, like if he actually just messed up, that maybe would have made him a little bit more interesting. I do agree with you about the family. I think it was realistic that they all knew all along, and I actually liked how her mum handled that part of the story. I found them all traveling with Oz like a big dysfunctional family so enjoyable to read. Like, his reaction to her sister on the plane was hilarious.
It's so hard with romance because it's like, what can you do so differently? And yeah, I think one of them did have to do something quite wrong, and I think I would have liked it to have been Mallory. Like, maybe she'd, not that I want her to hurt Nolan, and he did need a flaw, I don't know, something a bit more than that. And I get it, like I didn't really think of it like that, that everyone would then think the reason she's in the championships is because he's paid for her. Like, I just took it as if, like, they're getting together and now he's lied to her and he's not telling her full truths, and that's kind of where I was going with it. And I did understand it.
I was under the opinion that he just wouldn't have even thought about telling her. It wasn't like he was keeping it as a secret on purpose, but I think in his mind it was so separated, like him funding her had nothing to do with him loving her.
I think if he'd just invested the same as other people had, but I think because he'd done that huge bulk amount, that's when it becomes...
He also put her name forward for something, didn't he? There was a competition where they can only pick one amateur, and didn't he pushed them to choose her, I think, in one as well. So it wasn't just the financial, it was he was actually the one that put her name forward.
Yeah, so it could come across a bit controlling, maybe.
Yeah.
So far we've discovered he is a bit of a stalker and is controlling, so he definitely has flaws. So they've broken up and now they're at the World Championships and they're going to face each other in a chess showdown. Nolan is forthcoming. He doesn't have any miscommunication issues. It's all Mallory generally. So why has he not reached out to her? But like, she was so awful to him as well. So I get it on that kind of sense. I thought they was going to be getting back together throughout chess games. Like, each game they play will be something that leads them to getting back together. But it was completely different. They met the night before. She just went out for a walk and she went to where the chess championships are and he was there and they just actually spoke. And it was a complete opposite of what I'd ever imagined this makeup point would be like. And I liked it because it was different, but I was still like, I need more. I want those tick boxes of these big plays of affection and these big challenges of will they or are they going to get back together? How is this going to happen? Again, it was just something else that I found was possibly a little too easy, but I also did like it because it was different. So I'm just really conflicted. So I am interested in how you feel about it. We then move into the chess games, but we don't get a chess game at all. And I was like, no, I need more. And I know I said that I liked things to be a bit different, but I feel like it just kind of rushed through it. They got together and then we just discover that they was obviously together. Even though no one ever says anything, they obviously got back together and it was clear that Mallory won the championship. How did that happen? Who won what game? What did you both think of it?
I suppose after his sort of consistency with how much he was showing his love for her from the very beginning, I guess it did kind of not make sense that he wouldn't have reached out to her, but I would have maybe liked a little bit more there. Maybe, you know, seeing him, you know, lots of missed calls on her phone or something and her ignoring it. In regards to the ending itself, I was so excited about that final chess game. I wanted to see the two of them playing each other. I didn't want it just to end so abruptly like that, that you didn't know what happens and then goes into the epilogue. And I would have absolutely loved to have seen the chess game play out in real life. I'm not saying I didn't like the book, because I actually really did enjoy the book. I gave it 4 out of 5 stars, but for me it was lots of little wee things that took that one star off at the end for me, and one of them was the fact that I didn't feel like we had that completion at the end. And I would love to have actually seen the tension or felt the tension when Mallory did beat him for a second time.
I think it made sense that he didn't reach out, because he's the perfect guy, right? So I think he was just respecting her decision to call things off, and he was like pining from afar. And I think he was just knowing he was going to see her at the championship, but giving her her space, because she had said, like, she walked out, she didn't want to have this anymore. I think he was just like, okay, I got too involved by financially supporting you. You felt like I was too controlling, so I'm just going to totally step back because that's what you want. So it did feel believable to me. The way they got back together too, I do know what you mean about being non-eventful. I mean, look at us being like, we hate the miscommunication trope. Just talk to each other. And then they do just talk to each other and we're like, nah, anymore. But still, I do agree with you all with that. It just makes me laugh. Again, like you guys, we went through this book just waiting for the moment they finally face each other in a competition again. Is what he wanted the whole book. He kept asking for it and we never got to see it. Ali, why? Why did you do this?
I'm heartbroken at this point.
Oh, we got the recap, like you said, after the fact, which weirdly felt like a spoiler, but it was after it had happened. Yeah, I was like, whoa, 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 spoiler. Like, let me see it. Don't tell me. What I would have loved to have seen was to watch the first game when they're not together yet. Like, have them when it's all very tense and see what happens. I don't care who wins, but preferably the one who won, physically won the game, would be the one who kind of like lost emotionally in that match. Maybe then after that, when you've got all that delicious tension, then have them meeting and that building at nighttime and having that conversation. And that game with all the tensions of them being broken up and not speaking, like that would have just been unbelievable to watch. Aww. And I feel like I was robbed.
I agree. Yeah. There's a part of me that was just like, I wish it was just me that felt like this, but you both do. Mm. So we're on to something. Ali, why? Why did you do this to us? But I have to say, though, as a whole, I did really, really enjoy this book. Yeah. And I flicked through it so quickly. I was just so invested in the chess games, I think, and just wanted to know how that all played out. And I was just so excited as well to have an Ali Hazelwood book on our YA Book Jam podcast. Oh, like, I'm so really cool. Happy about it. It made a nice change to our usual thrillers and horror choices that we generally have. And I just want to say thank you so much for reading that book with me. And to everyone who's listening, if you've read along with us, I'm just so grateful that you have. Thank you all for listening and for tuning in.
There's no way readers have listened to this and not had an opinion about what we've said, because I feel like, so let us know what we've got wrong.
Absolutely. Tell us, we want to know, and we want to know all your favourite quotes and everything as well, because there was some great one-liners in this. So next month, our lovely Jampot Shelley will be bringing in her book choice. Can you give us all a little teaser?
Yeah. Okay, sure. So next month I have went for a book that really spoke to me on many levels. And it is contemporary, it's romantic, and it's got a speculative twist. And it's for anybody that ever felt invisible in high school.
Oh, that's really intrigued me. I'm now thinking of that Buffy episode when there's the invisible girl.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah.
That would be a good one to watch as well, just to chat about.
But thanks everyone for tuning in. This has been YA Book Jam with me, Arden Jones.
Me, Shelley Mack.
And JL Bleakley.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please remember to like and subscribe where you listen. You can follow us on Instagram and X at YA_bookjam and on Substack at YA Book Jam Podcast. If you're a publisher and have books coming out this year that you think would be interested in, you can email us at yabookjampodcast@gmail.com.
You can follow Shelley on Instagram, X, Blue Sky and TikTok at Shelley Mack Books.
To watch Arden interview authors and illustrators, check out Kidlit Live on YouTube and follow on Instagram at Kidlit Live. You can also follow Arden on X, Blue Sky and Instagram at Arden Eliza Jones.
And you can follow Jess on Instagram, Blue Sky and TikTok at JL Bleakley.
Check and mate.
Yay.